Blog Talk Radio.
Joining us at a little India Ari in your life really kind of goes into where we're going to go in terms of our discussions. But LA Bachelor here, it is the Bachelor News Radio show. We thank you for joining us on the Bachelor News Radio Network. 646-929-0130 to number to get in touch with us. And of course, Pad Nation on Facebook, Pad Nation 2, number 2 on Twitter. Go straight to the phones. Thanks to Pastor John C. Fitzgerald for joining us. He is a Emmy Award winning documentary filmmaker and TV producer. And very good to have him on in the midst of everything that's going on. We'll touch on a few of those things. He is Anthony Harrison. And Anthony, I appreciate you, man. I appreciate your patience on the line. And I appreciate your patience in terms of this conversation in the midst of this virus, man. I mean, you know, it's no way around it, especially in where you are. You from up top. You know how it is. And you know, you're in a city. So that thing is real for you. It's real for you as opposed to Nebraska, with all due respect, and some other places.
Yeah, LA, thank you so much for having me. And I want to just, send out my heart to everyone, you know, throughout the world, literally, who's dealing with this situation. It's beyond surreal, really, in terms of where we are. And yeah, I'm here in New York City, and you know New York. New York is the city that never sleeps, so people are still doing their thing, but not quite at the numbers. Nowhere near the numbers that it usually is on a normal day. There are times when I have to really, really, like, smack my head and come to it and realize that the streets are so empty. It's almost like ghost town sometimes. I walk, you know, I've done some walking earlier in the week, and it was like, you know, you had to, like, look to see somebody. And this was like during the middle of the day. So yeah, it's real. It's surreal. if that is at all possible. And my heart just goes out to everyone. And I just, we're praying for the best possible outcome in this situation.
Yeah, it's really sad. And again, I don't want to get into the policies of things, but, you know, you live there, so you have to, we all have to follow the laws of the land. So we'll leave it at that. But as it relates to, just to kind of get away from this, if we can, Anthony, from the deliberate, when it comes to things that give us distractions from these things, and that would be movies, that'd be documentaries, that'd be all those type of things. And so when we look at one of the things we didn't get a chance to talk about because of the scheduling and things is the concerns of when we get to these points, documentaries that are winning Oscars and Tonys and all of these things that they're winning. And you and I have talked about this, and I think that what you've said to me is very valid. It also speaks to the fact that if Anthony Harris has a great film, but is not winning an Emmy or an Oscar or whatever, that's taken away from me, Anthony. You could correct me, please do. That's taken away from your money. Because if you don't get that, you don't get that label on it, right? Right? Like, you know what good is it? You could, again, correct me. If you don't get that label on it, you're not getting that money. So if Denzel is doing a show, if he's going to be the lead actor on your film, but your film is not going to win an Emmy, then you or Denzel is not going to win the money that you're supposed to win in the first place. So talk about that, because I think, it goes back to, you know, white privilege as opposed to black producers and writers and production people and actors and actresses and writers and everything else that go into these films, independent or not, and don't win. So if you don't win, that's like me playing football as a quarterback, and I'm not in the top five in scoring touchdowns, I'm not getting that off-season money. I'm not getting it because I'm not in the top whatever. So it seems like that would be the same thing in that realm.
Right. Just to back up for a second, you were earlier talking about, and please correct me if I'm wrong, you were earlier talking about how winning an award is would lead to monetary gain. Is that correct? Is that what you were saying?
Yes, it's all about the monetary gain because the monetary gain is going to influence everything, right? So you want to make sure if you don't have the money.
I want to push back on that just a little bit, if you allow me. For black mainstream artists, you know, that's not really been the case. Where you win the award and things open up for you. And bear with me for a second. We're familiar with the actress and the comedian Monique, right? We're familiar with her, right?
Absolutely. Okay. She's been in the news a lot. She's been in the news a lot and pushing back. Go ahead.
Sure. In 2009 or 2010, recently, in the last decade or so, I believe she won an Oscar for Best Supporting Actress. I forget which role it was. I forget the role, but she won that. But now there was no monumental lift to her career in terms of acting. And you do know, because I think you were talking about her in the news, you do know that she had a pushback with Netflix about a year or so ago in terms of how she was treated, because she was mad because, hey, here I am, I didn't win awards, and how come I'm not getting more monetary gain? so she was pushing back against that. So I think really it depends on who you are and what kind of roles you do as a black artist or even a singer, what kind of songs you put out. Then you'll get those kind of roles, kind of like if you play the game, so to speak, you will get that monetary gain because the winning of the award we haven't always won those awards, especially in the film industry. We haven't always won those awards. And in music, to be quite frank with you, black music has kind of been whiteball in terms of where it's at today. I mean, I think we can all attest to the fact that years ago, black music was a key contributor to the Grammy Awards, and that's not really the case now. As a matter of fact, people are saying that we need to have our own award show because black music is almost invisible in that thing. So just a slight pushback on that, because you would think that winning an award would open up doors for you, but you still, as a black person, if that's what you want, you know, if you want to get those awards and still get some sort of monetary gain, there's a certain kind of game that you have to play in order to get there and stay successful. Now, there are Denzels. Don't get me wrong. Denzel's out there, and his career speaks for itself, and Denzel is awesome. But how many Denzels are there out there, really?
So, but let me ask you this, Anthony, real quick. You've won awards, right? So, when you won those awards, where did that take you? First question. The second part of that is, if that's the case, and you don't see the money accumulating with the awards, whether it be Monique or you or whoever, then what's to say that why even worry about getting an Emmy or an Oscar or anything like that if this is not going to lead to not only the monetary, which is important, but the monetary leads to the Tyler Perry's, right? The exposure, right? So the production thing, right? So you're putting more black people and brown people in positions on the camera. So if those awards are not resonating to anything, then what's the point of even have those anyway? Two-part question.
Well, to be fair and to be honest, you know, I think we all, and maybe I'm being a bit presumptuous here, but I think we all want to get respected and honored by our peers. There is some ego there, and frankly, the ego is not a bad thing. A fractured ego is a terrible thing, but there is some ego and appreciation for work, for good work done. There is an element of that there. I'm not going to lie about that. But to be very honest with you, in my personal case, yes, I have two Emmy Awards. It was a great experience. I appreciate it. When I won the second one, I did not even attend the New York
Wow.
Emmy
Wow.
An Emmy Awards show. Well, there's some context to that because I was in the process of leaving that job, and I didn't, you know, I'd gone like maybe three times, and you know, one time I'd won, and another time I didn't. But that time I didn't go. I mean, I just did not have the energy to go. I wasn't feeling it. You know, I think it's good to do it once. You know, I did it. You know, the one time I won, I did it. It was a good feeling. I'm not going to lie. But the second time I did not go. I did not go, and it really, I mean, I just wasn't really feeling it in terms of what it led to. At that time, after winning that second one, I made a personal decision to devote my work into doing things for Black people. So quite frankly, when you do that as an artist of any kind, you've already made a decision that, you know, it's quite likely that you know, awards are not going to come your way, and sometimes and monetary gain will not likely come your way. I made that decision.
But I have to ask you too, Anthony, because the point of this conversation is what a person respected like you can do in your talents to help Black people. But I guess the initial question before you get to that, with all due respect, is that if you don't want an Emmy like Anthony, do you have the influence to be able to do that, to be able to have your project as a Black and brown person, a male or female, to even get your influence up there and, oh, by the way, tell your story. There's a different side of Rosewood. There's a different side of Rosa Parks. There's a different side to a lot of stuff. So do I need to respect and follow Anthony Harris with this Emmy Award winning, or do I just need to be following someone that's Black and brown that's going to be bringing these things to the table?
Well, I don't want you to follow me. You follow your heart. You know, I don't want anyone to follow me. I've made some mistakes along the way. You follow your heart, but I understand your question. I certainly understand your question. The thing is that in today's age with the technology and the platforms there, I mean, as I think I said to you the last time we talked, there are some people doing some incredible things, right? I'm talking about Black people doing some incredible things on these platforms, these media platforms, some incredible things, some incredibly Black affirming things that they don't seem to be concerned about an award or any kind. They're getting the information and the product out. So in this day and age, the door is wide open. Literally, the door is wide open for people to do the things that they want to do. And, you know, we talked earlier about how things are shifting. There's going to be a need for more content that comes across these platforms. I think everybody's binge watching now. You know, everyone's going to have to get an account to some streaming service where they binge watch. So there are much more opportunities for people who don't really want to aspire to get an Emmy Award or an Oscar or other types of honors. So I just think that the possibilities are wide open now, and it's important that people follow their hearts. Now, in my case, I followed my heart, and I ended up leaving. That was my heart was telling me to leave, and that's what I did. And as I said earlier, I made a choice to do tell stories that affirmed Black people and brought to light some issues that revolve around Black experiences.
The only thing, Anthony, I would say to because of the topic that we had this evening is, again, I will put you up there with anybody in terms of what you would inspire. But if you look at, right, because we grew up in those areas, the Norman Lears with the Jeffersons and those, you know, good times and things, those areas where they kind of based the Black culture on the culture of the time. Can we get away with that on a Me Too, let's say, or Not Me Too, or anything along those lines, and be inspiring, not only be inspiring, but be conscious, be professional, be talented enough to get our point across in the midst of this Trump era? And you and I already, I mean, look, we already talked about Trump, so we don't, you know what I mean when I say the Trump era and that era, can we get past that?
Of course we can. Of course we can. But I think it kind of depends on what is important to the artist and what really is that artist's background, you know, because there are a dime a dozen artists who just take the money. Take the money and sell out the culture. They're a dime a dozen. I mean, they literally are. They are a dime a dozen doing, making gobs of money and what have you. But if your background or your experience tells you that you have self-love and self-respect and you love black people and you want to affirm black people, then it would be no problem. Trump era, Bush era, George Washington era, whatever era you want to talk about, you'd have no problem putting your stuff out there and being professional, being talented, and being an advocate for black people and providing that social change that you talk about. That would be no problem. So it really depends on the background, where the person's mind and heart really is. If they want to make money, then that's no problem. They will make a lot of money and they will do art that is questionable in terms of whether they respect black people. But if they care and love black people, then they can also do that. And it's interesting too, because whether you are a plumber, a janitor in a school teacher, if you don't have black love and self-respect, then it will be revealed. I mean, I understand. I don't want to go
right.
too far down a rabbit hole, but I hope you understand what
no,
I'm
you're
saying.
Fine.
That, yeah, if that's there, if that core is there, then whatever you do will be black affirming. Whatever you do will come from a place where I love myself, I love black people, and so it won't be a problem. And I want to be really clear, is that loving yourself as an individual is not hating anyone. As a matter of fact, you are, as a good friend of mine has always said, loving yourself, you are less likely to harm anyone else. Because you love who you are.
But there's a consciousness, but Anthony, you and I have talked on and off, really, reality, on and off the air about the consciousness of black people and how we look at each other, how we deal with each other. And so I guess I employ you because you're already doing it, but just the fact that we have to be conscious in terms of our work, right? You're multi-talented, right? I don't have anything with acting and all that, right? So you guys have to be more talented in the consciousness of what we're trying to portray in the midst of everything, not just the Trump thing, but like with this virus, like it going down. Like I even heard Anthony, and you could tell me specifically, that even with people of color with this virus, like there's a different dynamic going on there. So why not put forth a documentary, right? You seize the opportunity if you're in that position, right, to do that.
Mm-hmm.
Seize that opportunity to speak forth of those areas that are going on that will affect black and brown people. Why not do that? Like this is a cease. If there's a silver lining, if you're a praying person, and I know you are a Christian person, like there's a silver lining somewhere there. So there you go. Let's figure out how we can make awareness of those people. That's the kind of things. I'm not hearing that. That's the concern I feel with that. But in general, in terms of all the multi-talented, we are so black, we're so talented, we're so athletic, we're so smart, we're so sexy, we're all of those things, and we're not grasping and taking and seizing the moment in all of those things, I guess. And the reason why I had you on, and the reason why you responded so well where we are.
I'm sorry. So you're saying that right now there's an opportunity to tell a story.
It's a huge opportunity from the economics, but more importantly from your realm. So from your expertise.
Yeah.
Right. That we have an opportunity, not just the virus thing, right? That's, you know, unfortunately, God forbid, like that's, we hope and pray that's a side thing and we get through that. But from what you do, right, the face, right? So we don't have to depend. I don't want to. I guess what I'm saying to you as a beginner and a novice, I don't want to turn on a novice and turn on the TV and have to hope that Anthony is getting. I don't care about that. I just want to see that Anthony is doing his thing, right? And we're expanding and expounding, and we're doing what we need to do, a Marcus Garvey type of way of things. They don't want us. We're going to do our own thing. I guess that's the moral to the story for me and a lot of people that knew you were going to be on that had concerns and questions about that.
Right, right. Absolutely. I'm not sure if I'm going to speak to specifically what you're saying, but definitely we have to have that attitude that we are here and we're going to tell our stories. We have to have that attitude. You talked about the virus just a little while ago, and I just want to say something that you kind of put a light bulb in my head. You know, some of the stories we've heard initially, I don't know if you heard in terms of the virus, is that it wasn't really affecting Black people. I don't know if you heard that or not, but the virus wasn't really affecting Black people as much, right? And my fear, and maybe there's a story here that I can work with, and I appreciate you turning on the light bulb. But my fear is that just like with HIV, just like with suicides and some other things, is that right now, initially, and I could be wrong on this information, but right now the face of this virus is not Black. The overwhelming face of it is not Black. But years later, you know, because they say it's going to be a year or so before this thing, they get an actual vaccine. Years or months later, my fear is that the face of this virus will become Black, just as the case with HIV. And years ago, when people said suicide is not a Black thing, now we're seeing Black people of all ages taking their lives. That's my concern, because we as Black people are vulnerable. On many levels, we're vulnerable, and it, you know, we are easily played upon in situations like this. So that hopefully, and again, you've given me an idea. Hopefully, something can be expressed, whereas we can start taking better care of ourselves and really being aggressively healthy, being healthy in these situations. But yeah, by all means, we have the potential to tell any kind of story we want to tell. But I think in some parts, and I have to challenge myself with this, that sometimes there's fear that we have in terms of stepping forward and being that assertive and being that strong, because being an advocate for Black people can be a lonely experience and be very lonely, because you're fighting, at times you're fighting two fronts. So it can be a very lonely experience. So it's important for you as someone who's an advocate for Black people to take care of yourself. That's important, because that can be a lonely road at times, and it can be very disappointing and at times heartbreaking. So that's important. I hope I didn't go down a rabbit hole or express points that were not to your question, but those are things that popped up in my head.
No, you did. And as a matter of fact, you and I will have a brainstorm off air about some other stuff that I want to mention. I don't have the time to mention now. But yes, sir. Absolutely, sir. You did not go down a rabbit hole, because these are things that need to be addressed, because these are societal things. Some people might look at it at a cultural thing and a tribal thing. These are societal things as it relates to the film industry and everything, which is why I had you on. And listen, Anthony, I will have you on. Please do. I know you're in the New York area. Please do be careful. Please, for you and your family, please do be careful so we can talk to you in a healthy state. God bless you. You be aware. And we will talk to you very soon, sir.
I appreciate it, LA. You be well, and please, all the listeners be well as well. Thank you very much.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. And we will get back to you on some of those phone calls, because we did get some calls, and I do want to get back to you. And so I'm going to email you, or you email me, so we can coordinate all of that. 646-929-0130, the number to get in touch with us. Take a break. Switch gears. Listen, this virus is very scary. This virus is very connection and very personal. And I want to get to Dr. Barbara Levie, Dr. Barb, I call her, and ask her from a mental standpoint, because this is, I mean, this is some stressful, you know what. And I want to get to her and ask her how we get through this. How do you get through this? How do you deal with this? How do you cope with all of this? Because everybody you know is dealing with this, and even my family, right, in Connecticut, where she's from. We'll talk about that. 646-929-0130, the number to get in touch with us on the Bachelor News Radio Show. Stay tuned. To the show, we thank you for joining us. Thanks to our guest, Pastor John C. Fitzpatrick, also Anthony Harris, Emmy award-winning documentary filmmaker and TV producer here on the show. I want to go back to the phones and bring in a guest, the lovely and talented. We haven't had her on, man, I think, I don't know, might have been Christmas time or something, I don't know, but anyway. It's always good to have her on. Listen, she's lovely and talented, and she's from Connecticut, my home state, New Haven, Connecticut. And she is a clinical psychologist. She is Dr. Barbara Levie. And Doc, I call you Dr. Barb, so that's what I'm going to call you. Thank you for coming
that's
on,
fine.
As always. Thank you for your patience. Thank you for patience on the line. Thank you for coming on. And these extreme, we seem to have you on, but extreme circumstances, but you know, a lot has been said, Dr. Barb, in terms of what's been going on, and people just kind of do grinding out the norm. You know, you wash your hands, you got the sanitizer and the soap and this and that, drink a lot of fluids, you don't go out and this and that. But a lot of people are very concerned, and I think that, and I'm not a big fan of Governor in New York, but he said, look, the extreme and the chaos and all of that could be worse than the actual clinical part in terms of the physical part. So do you stand by that, you know, we have to make sure we wash our hands, but also that it could be more dangerous that we get too much involved into the mental side, like, oh my God, my son, my daughter, my mother, my father can be damaged, and I'm more concerned about that?
Well, I think we all have to try to take a deep breath and do what we can to stay as grounded as possible and develop new habits during this, you know, new normal. The situation is not ideal. We're all under stress. We don't know exactly how the numbers will pan out and what will happen, but we can take care of ourselves and our families. I wish that they had called it, instead of social distancing, physical distancing, because socially we need to stay connected. Even if we're not in arm's length of people, we need to stay connected to our families, our friends, music, other people, in ways that luckily we have technology that can help us do it. And people are going to have to be creative And I mean, your radio show is one way that people are connected and learning about things and figuring out how to manage in these difficult times. But there are other ways that we can do it. I was talking to someone today who reconnected with a book club that they used to do when they lived in Boston, and they're now in Denver, and the book club is going to go online. So they're excited
but,
that they can reconnect with
though,
their friends.
Real quick, though, Doc, if you're saying physical and social, some people
mm-hmm.
might, A, take it the same way, number one. Number two, if you're concerned, I won't say complaint, but if you're concerned about, you know, not coming out a certain amount of time, but there's a physical aspect that people are trying to adjust to, then why not allow that to happen and then move forward?
Well, we're doing it to protect our society. And what the doctors are saying and what the CDC in simple English is saying is that this disease is highly communicable, more so than regular flu. And we need to stop the disease by not going out and meeting with other people, not being physically close to people other than our closest family, and keeping a distance. And we don't have to, you know, panic because of it. We just need to keep our distance because it will slow down the numbers of people that may get sick. So we're doing it, you're doing it, if, regardless of what age you are or what age your children are, you're doing it to protect people that are more vulnerable, people who have serious illnesses, and if they catch it, they will have a tough time, or people who are older than 65. That so far, that's what we know, that those are the most vulnerable populations. If you have diabetes, if you have another illness, you need to be even more cautious. But everybody needs to be cautious because we care about everyone in our society, whether it's your mother, your grandmother, your aunt, your great-grandmother. It doesn't matter who it is that you're protecting the society as a whole by changing your habits and keeping a distance from people. So that's why we're being cautious.
But if you're in a situation where you and by the way, I am type 2 diabetic,
mm-hmm.
and I've been taking those precautions. But Doc, if you're in a situation where, just look at Florida, right? They're down there. And they're on the beach and having fun. That makes no sense. So then how do you wrap the mentality around people who are scared? And then they see these Floridians, these young kids that are enjoying spring break, that all is well in the world. People will get that, but how do you wrap people around those things though? When they come to you and say, look, I mean, what, look at this. What is the problem? What are you talking about? What?
Well, I think we've had mixed messaging and we've had misinformation. We're not listening to the experts the way we should be. And unfortunately, the information that's coming out to the public has been too slow. It's changing now. We're getting better information now, but young people tend to, you know, think that nothing will happen to them. And there's what I heard today, the best way to explain it is that this is a new virus that none of us have immunity to. Simply because it's brand new. No one has immunity. Other, you know, people will say, well, I have a good immunity to the flu. I don't catch the flu often. Strain that nobody has ever experienced before. And therefore, they're saying certain blood types may have more resistance to it, but that's all we know so far. And so, therefore, we have to be excessively cautious. And what's happening in Florida is a terrible mistake. And again, we're seeing it in what happened in Italy. They kept doing things. They thought that they were fine, and that's why they're not. We have to learn. mistakes of other countries. In South Korea, they did strict, you know, testing, and they checked what was going on, and they've had better results because they stopped people from intermingling. People can
sure.
carry the disease without knowing they have it. They can have no symptoms. And therefore, because we don't know if someone is sick or not, if we're not testing, we don't know. And we're not testing the general public. So therefore, we all need to restrain ourselves and do it for the good of society. And that's, that's what I understand from doctors in my family and other things that I'm reading. And I'm not panicked. I'm not panicked. I'm just suggesting that we have to be cautious. And
but
people are anxious because they got mixed messages. Misinformation does that.
Sure, Doc. We're talking with Dr. Barbara Levy, of course, here, the psychotherapist and best-selling author here on the Bachelor News radio show. But, Doc, if you're not, and I'm not, I don't want to use your term, so I'm not saying you're selling anything. But what I am saying is that there is the cautions out there, and this is the Stephen King The Stand movie, if you remember that. Mm-hmm. Like there's a, I'm sure you've been,
I didn't
so
see that
there's
movie.
That well, okay. But the point is that, you know, there is, you know, go about your business mentality. But there are people though, Doc, as you live through, and you know your regular patients, let alone this, that are saying, hey, you know, this ain't 9/11, but I'm very concerned. Me and my kids are back home for 2 or 3 weeks. I'm not making this money. There's something else going on that the government is not telling me. I'm very stressed about that because I want to make sure that my household is fine. So in the midst of what you may believe and what you may think is the reality is, what do you tell those people who are very concerned, aside from the stimulus package and everything and whatever the culture, the fact that they are very concerned that at the end of the day, they're going to have to struggle all over again or struggle to a point where whatever the government decides that they want to give them?
Well, I think it's when you have a traumatic event, and this is a traumatic event.
It is.
It's like 9/11, except that the enemy is invisible. And so it is a traumatic event. We all have to recognize that we need to do whatever we can that the experts are telling us. Science has some knowledge of how disease is transmitted, and we have to listen to them. And we have to do those things and take care of our families, take care of our health and our mental health. We need to exercise, get out in the air, staying away from other people. You can walk and you know, you can say hello to people from, you know, wave and say, how are you managing? On the porches of in Israel now, I see people playing concerts to their neighbors and singing with one another. It's online. They're doing that as well. There are many ways that people are connecting and saying, okay, this is scary, but we have to try to live our lives as best we can. We have to protect our families and do what they recommend. There's a great video, a little video for children to explain why to wash your hands. And they pour pepper onto water, and they tell the kids to wash their hands and stick their finger into the pepper, and the pepper moves away from the finger. And it helps the child to understand that is what happens to the viruses, that it is it's repelled by and it's broken down by soap. So that's why they say wash your hands. It's not just, you know, it's not just to calm you. It actually does work scientifically. But you have to do it frequently, and you have to make sure that if you're exposed to someone who you think was sick, even from your family, and that's just the prudent thing to do. And people, you know, are not sure of or afraid or don't think that it's necessary. If they think it's just the flu, it's not the same as the flu. It's not the same as the flu that we know. It's more communicative and it transfers faster and easier. And every person, I think that the numbers just exponentially expand. So therefore, we have to isolate ourselves. Like it or not, nobody likes it. But do things at home that'll be fun. I can share, if you want, I can send it to you. There's a great video that I saw that someone made of simple games that you can play with your kids with bottles and simple things that you have at home that are exercise and fun and will help the kids to pass some time. There are school programs online. There are games and things that you can do. I have one client who knows a gaming site that people can talk to each other while they're gaming from a distance. There's all kinds of things that we can do to help us feel connected and to help, you know, read books to your kids or read their book readings online. I suggested to one family that I'm working with that the grandparents were caring for the children, for the grandchildren, and they've been calling a lot, and it sort of makes the family nervous. And I said, well, have them read to your kids on Skype. You know, have them schedule time for them to spend time with your kids on Skype, and so that they have a connection with their grandparents. And it'll help to make it feel less frightening. And that doesn't mean that everyone is anxious now. I before this all sort of blew up, I was in Nashville, and I came back, and every single client that I talked to online was already feeling the anxiety, and that was, you know, over a week ago. And the anxiety continues because this is, nobody knows quite how to manage the new normal. Do yoga at home. There's tons of classes that will help you to relax. I do Zumba at home, and it's wonderful. At least I can get the exercise. And I miss my classes and the people that I would exercise with, but I'm doing what's safe for me right now. And that's what everyone has to do. We're doing it for everyone else, not just for yourself, but for everyone else in society. And find creative ways, you know, start a book group if you don't have one, and do it online. There are multiple ways that you can collaborate with people. I met a songwriter in Nashville who lives in Chicago, and we may work on a song. So there are things we can do even when we're sheltering in place. And having lived in Israel during wars, I know how awful it can be when you are disconnected. In a physical war, people aren't necessarily, they don't have to distance themselves that much from one another. And this is hard because human beings are social beings. Most of us don't live, you know, in isolation. Reach out. I mean, I've seen in my community online, the local supermarket said, you know, we're organizing meals for the hospitals. Would you like to contribute? And we are going to organize it every day to different hospitals and to police forces and things. And people are doing those kinds of things. They're helping one another. They're looking in or checking in on their neighbors and asking, do you want me to bring you some supplies? They're setting up hours for the elderly that are, you know, earlier in the morning when other people aren't there, before, you know, other people have been in the supermarket. There are things that people are doing. And that's what gives me hope that everyone will find ways to adjust to this and make it work. And unfortunately, there are states that are behind the eight ball, and they're behind the curve. And we're trying to flatten that curve so that the hospitals don't get overwhelmed. If we can flatten the curve and keep people from getting the disease all at once, then the hospitals will be able to manage it. It's sort of like, you know, the war effort is what we have to do. We have to think of it. It's our patriotic duty to do things that will help. I saw somebody is making face masks with one of those computer things. You know, what do they call them? The computerized things that build, can copy things and make masks. And they're going to make, like, they made like 200 masks on a computer. So people are coming up with creative ways to help the situation. And anytime you can do something that feels like it's helping someone else and helping society, it's easier to manage anxiety. You still there? Hello? Hello?
I'm sorry.
I wasn't sure if you heard me.
Yeah, I did. I'm just trying to figure out when I'm pay you in time and yeah.
I don't want to frighten people. I want to help people come up with creative ways to manage what's going on. And we need to do what we can for everyone else. And we'll feel better if we do. So if you know someone who their kids are down in Florida, you can talk to them in a calm way and say, you know what, they really ought to come home and they need to probably, you know, be more cautious. And that's the best you can do.
Well, do you have, if you can let people know how they can reach out and make sure that they can help those people, especially in Florida, if you will, that would be awesome.
Well, I would say if you know people in Florida, you can simply say, you know, go to the CDC and hear what they're saying. There are things online. I could look it up while we're talking if you want, or I can send it to you, ways that people should read about what they can do to protect themselves and to protect society. So I can send that to you after the show. You can put it on your website so people will know. But everyone needs to be informed. I was talking with another client today, and her ideas were great. And she said she's not watching a lot of TV. I would watch PBS if I was going to do anything. That's where you'll get better information. But don't watch too much because it can become overwhelming. And then do things that make you happy. If you do things that will make you laugh. You know, watch funny movies. Don't watch, you know, scary movies. That's only.
But if you got a president and everybody else is saying doom and gloom, it's really hard to do the happiness. That's the only part of it, Doc Barb, is that you want to look for something that's going to be positive and happy. But if you turn on your TV, and maybe I guess you don't turn on your TV, you get doom and gloom. And nobody wants doom and gloom at this point.
I watch TV to be informed, and I watch it enough that I know what's going on, and I read enough of legitimate good resources. If people are watching Fox Network, they have been misled, because in the same way that at first they were saying it was a hoax and this and that and the other, it's not. It's a real thing. It's a serious illness. And we have to take it as that. If we're lucky and we do the steps that we need to do and we can stem it some and slow it down in our nation, then we'll be lucky. Because the misinformation in the beginning has done harm. So we have to follow the guidelines of the CDC. And yes, it can be frightening, but as long as you are aware and do the things that they're suggesting, you're reducing your risk. And then do things that make you feel good. Listen to music that's uplifting. Watch movies that are positive. You know, play games, play board games with your kids. Enjoy your time with your children as much as you can. Do things that make you feel good, because that will help you fight the stress. That will help.
And Dr. Barb, just so you know, though, you know, the this particular president has said, you know, go about your business. Like, you know, it's not an issue where there's nothing wrong. Now clearly we can't be congregated in certain numbers, but he kind of said, you know, all is well. And
that's not what the experts are saying. Period.
Okay.
I'm not an alarmist. I'm not trying to frighten people, but I don't think he understands the magnitude of what's going on. Listen to Angela Merkel today. She spoke to her people and she said, this is serious. Listen, we have to do these things. She didn't say this is just going to pass. If we're lucky in the summer, it may subside, but it may come back in the fall. If we're lucky, and no one is sure that that's going to happen either. So that's what the experts are saying. And they were predicting it months ago. So there are people in the government who knew and predicted it and were warning and sounding the alarm, and he didn't want to listen to the alarm. And it's unfortunate because it will do harm. Our responsibility is to do what we can now and take it seriously.
Yeah. So if someone just ultimately, though, Doc, gets in a situation where they're stressed out about it, whether they're underemployed, unemployed, or have nothing to do with it, at the end of the day, like I've had to explain to my young teenagers, and I'm sure you've had people you had to explain to, that, you know, this shield pass at some point, but at some point you don't want to be depressed about it. You don't want to be upset about it, especially if you don't have the actual virus. You want to be uplifting. You want to make sure you're encouraging people. I'm speaking for you, and it's not my business, but I'm just saying, what would you say to those who are trying to uplift? What do you say to those who are very depressed about it moving forward?
I have a few things to say about that. Number one, there are insurance companies have adjusted their rules and are allowing online sessions and phone sessions at this time. So if someone is depressed and needs to talk and they have insurance, call your insurance company and call a provider. Well, a lot of providers who never gave online sessions are doing it now. So that's one thing you can do. I'm thinking of doing a free group for anybody who's lost their insurance or who just wants a support group, I'll do it free of charge, and I can do it at a distance. It's not therapy. If somebody needs therapy and I hear them in a support group, I will encourage them to go and talk to a therapist in their state, and there probably are therapists around the country who will be stepping up to the plate if people are depressed. So certainly I also had a call from Cigna today asking if I would do critical incidents at a distance as well. And I told them, of course. A critical incident is when a corporation has something going on and they call me, like after a bank robbery, I go out and I help the staff. Or if someone dies in a company, I go out and I help people to process what's happened. So I told Cigna, of course I'll do that, because that's something I can do. That's something I know how to do. And it's something that corporations offer to their employees. And I told Cigna that I want to do some groups that may be free as well. So I think we all have to step up to the plate and what we know to offer it to other people. So you as a radio station are offering knowledge to the people that listen to you. You are giving something to the community to help them know what to do and how they can best manage in this crazy new normal. When something like this happens, we're all impacted. You, me, the doctors, everyone who's living in the society is impacted by it. So we're all in it together in that sense. and we're all struggling with it, but we can help each other because every person has different strengths that they can give to other people. If you have a neighbor who lives alone and you know that they're alone, you can touch base with them. You can send them a text message and say, how are you doing? You can do the same with all your friends at a distance and stay in touch with them. There are people doing, you know, coffee clutches and happy hours online and just talking about how they're feeling. That helps. When we can talk about something, we feel better too. That's part of why therapy works. That when you're upset and you're alone in the problem and don't talk about it, that's when it festers and gets you more and more anxious and more depressed. When you can talk about it, you can come up with things you can do. I have another client who is on disability right now. They had an injury and they're on disability. And they're worried about finding a job because their job wasn't happy with them beforehand, and they need to find a job. And so I suggested, you know what? You've interviewed at a few places. He's very intelligent and has a lot of experience in the field that he's looking into. And I said, call some of those companies and offer to volunteer to do some work. If somebody can't come into work, you can do research from afar. And they may hire you afterwards. Just say, you know, I'm at home, you know, I'm homeschooling my kids and I'm at home. They don't know he's on disability right now. He can offer to do some volunteer work, and maybe it'll turn into a job down the road. So there's always something we can do to help ourselves feel a little better, and we can help our kids to do something. For instance, I saw online that they suggested that children write notes and send pictures and things to people in old folks' homes. So you go to an old folks' home's Facebook page and ask if they'd like you to have your kids send them drawings and cards, and let the kids make cards and send them to an old folks' home to somebody who doesn't have family checking in on them. So even your children, you can get involved in things that they can do that will be helpful during this time. And that's where our strength will come from. And in the same way that I think it's important to be as honest as you can with your kids without frightening them, that you help them to understand this is a tough time, but we'll find our way to manage even when we're stuck at home. You can make memories about fun things you did. I remember when the swine flu was happening in Mexico, I had family down there. And they all got together and they were all wearing masks and they were doing a cooking lesson together. And they remember it and they laugh about it. You know, that they all ended up fine. But they turned the time together into something positive. Now, not every moment together is going to be positive in the same way that vacations aren't all positive. But it makes sense as parents to think of things that you can do that will be fun for your kids, that will help them pass the time and maybe do something good for society. Teenagers, another client was asking me about their teenage child, and they said they're on Instagram all the time, and how do I get them to do some things with family? I said, well, you can ration the time as well and say, you know, you can do more, or on the weekends you can have an as-if sleepover where they stay up late and they can you know, talk into the night online. But you also say, you know, you can do X number of hours a day, and I can't tell the parent how much is the right amount of time. Each parent will decide for themselves what feels okay. And then they can do some things that will help the family or help the community. And they need to do their homework. If they're doing school online, they need to do homework too. So give them some structure. Kids need structure. Adolescents even need structure, even if they fight it. So give them some structure. Give them some guidelines. And talk to them about what they're feeling, because they're scared too. So, you know, there are things you can do to help your adolescent get through this as best they can. It's what I would recommend. And, you know, you want to do everything you can to give them resilience. And part of life is learning about tough things. That's how we immunize our kids. And I'm not suggesting that it's good that this is happening. It's certainly not. But you immunize your kids by talking to them about tough things and showing them how you get through tough times, whatever the tough time may be. And that's, you know, whether it's when they're young and a pet dies and you help them to grieve the loss of a pet, you're helping them to learn about loss and that life doesn't go on forever. Or when you move to a new community and it's hard to leave your friends, you talk to them about it and you tell them, okay, how can you stay in touch with your friends even after you move? And that's a little bit like what we're doing now. They were moved back home. And you can help them stay in communication with their friends and having a life aside from their family, but online. I hope that helps some. You know, and do people have questions who are listening? Are there any questions? I'm curious. Can you hear me? Hello? LA, can you hear me? LA? I can't hear you. Can you hear me? Can you hear me? Hello? Can you still hear me? I'm not sure if the connection is good. Can you hear me?